We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're back. It's season two of Solo Ship. Damn, we got renewed for season two.
Yeah, we made it big time now.
Yeah. So I'm Squirrel Patrol, JM to win from 1 week season. How was your off season?
Man, off season was great. It's I sent my wife and kids out of town a week and a half ago for the lead up to the season. They went to the in-laws. I've been working around the clock. So today at like 5 p.m. I'm like done with work and fully focused on rosters till Sunday. So yeah, I've made it through the crazy lead up to the season and ready to get going.
Yeah. I just, I got so much content this year and, just finished the last article like last night and God, it felt good. And then I realized like, oh, I've got a Sunday night showdown article. but neither here nor there. That'll be exciting to do Sunday afternoon. And we got week one. It's always an interesting week one, because my stance on week one is always that we think we know more than we do, right? It all comes together. Everyone's writing their articles, reading their articles, watching shows. We always have so much certainty leading into week one. And I remember week one last year, I felt I really know what's going on. Started looking at projections. And the guy was like popping in my, in the optimal lineups was Greg Dortch. And it's like, I've never even heard of this guy.
He actually had a good game week one too, didn't he? It was like three of the first 4 weeks. It was early in the season was when he was really hitting last year too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's week one's funny. I think, we have the Oracle in the scroll each week at 1 week season where we have like five of the strategy questions for the week. And one of the questions this week was, about how we handle the uncertainty of week one. And one of the things that I said was my strengths as a DFS player is balancing my understanding of strategy and theory with how well I know the teams and players and coaches. So I've actually had to realize that my greatest edge starts to kick in around weeks three and four, and my best weeks are typically weeks six onward. Whereas a lot of sharp DFS players, weeks one, two are their best weeks because they're able to blend the strategy. So I have to let go of some of my tendency to lean on my NFL knowledge in the early season because there's a little bit less of that to go on. And obviously, I know these teams and players better than most people, probably better than most content providers, but still significantly less well than I'll know them in week six because there's things that I think I know that it will turn out I don't know. There are things that I think based on what I've been hearing, what I've been seeing, that I'll be wrong on. So yeah, it's a very interesting week.
Yeah, it's funny. We've been doing this so long that we have season curves, right? I have the same feeling. Actually, my strongest season curve, I think, is basketball, where I always start off really hot, and then basketball is a grind. And by the end of March, you've got to be pretty committed to basketball and still be playing DFS basketball. But yeah, it's interesting how the season can tend to unfold the same way, as a DFS player year after year.
Yeah.
So one thing we did agree on, we were going to do hot takes at the start of each show. And by we agree, I mean Devin told us. We're going to do hot takes at the start of each show. So what, you know, do you have any really strong, you know, hot takes to lead us into week one?
Yeah, I'm going to throw, I have several, but I'll throw one your way. And this is one of my favorite players of week one. And this is a guy who rushed for 1,400 yards last year. He rushed for 13 touchdowns. He had three games of 30 plus points. Compare that to Josh Jacobs, who had, I believe it was four games of 30 plus points. He is 5,600 and nobody's going to want to roster him. And that's Miles Sanders, who is coming off of being in a rotation with Philadelphia because that's how they like to run their backfield and is now going to be the lead dog in Carolina. Some people have this perception that he's not the lead dog, that maybe Chuba Hubbard and him are splitting snaps. Like, Miles Sanders is so much better than Chuba Hubbard. It's not even funny. Worst case is he gets this 16 to 18 touch range that Javonte Williams, Raheem Mostert, Khalil Herbert, all these guys priced around him will get. He has just as much opportunity to hit for a big game on those touches. Best case, he gets these 22 to 24 touches that you're really paying $2,000, $2,500 more for other backs. So, yeah, a guy I'll be heavy on this week that is coming in with super low ownership projections, Miles Sanders. I think he could be one of the stories of week one.
Interesting. So, yeah, you know, that could be the winning ticket.
There you go.
Speaking of tickets, a word from one of our sponsors. More memories are made when you're there for live NFL action. And when you need tickets, Ticketmaster has got you covered. As the official marketplace of the NFL, Ticketmaster gives you more ways to find your perfect seat. Their interactive seat map gives you 360-degree previews of your section to make sure you have the best view of those pivotal plays. And if your plans change, Ticketmaster gives you more flexibility to sell or transfer your tickets. Plus, mobile tickets make getting in on game day a breeze, and you can even customize your Ticketmaster app to rep your team's colors. Find tickets today at Ticketmaster.com/NFL.
Man, I don't get part of the ad revenue because I'm not Roto-Grinders, but I kind of want to do one of these ad reads. That's pretty that's a blast.
that was awesome. So yeah, Miles Sanders. When you started off with like 1,400 yards, I was thinking like Derrick Henry. Like, yeah, you know, a lot of ownership. I was like, oh man, yeah, Miles, that is wild. I think Miles Sanders. Yeah, he's going to be low owned, and there's an expectation maybe more than anything else that Carolina, you know, is maybe not the dumpster fire they started off last season as, but that they're, you know, they've got a rookie quarterback. I think I saw right before we came on that DJ Shark is out, you know, so that the receiving options might already be whittling down. That's maybe a good thing for Miles Sanders. And I agree. I mean, they just signed him, you know, to a relatively big contract, I think, for a running back. And he's one of the free agents, you know, that switched teams in the offseason. So there had to be something they like there. So for my hot take, I always have a hard time with these things because I never know like what's too hot. I gotta say something that I think might not happen but could. So I'm gonna try to be directionally accurate with this one, because I think this week really shapes up as a week that reminds me a lot of week two last year. So my hot take, I think the Washington Commanders defense will be the lowest scoring defense on the slate this week.
Lowest scoring out of all the defenses.
Yes. Might be too hot.
I mean, but, even if they're middle of the pack at like, and they're right now they're coming at like highest owned play on the entire slate. And yeah, I mean, the thing is the Commanders are 7-point favorites. That's not like, they're not 19-point favorites. You know, it's not like Josh Dobbs can't throw a pass, and he's had two starts in these like 5 years in the NFL. He's not topped 200 yards. Like, they're going to just throw short passes to Rondell Moore and Greg Dortch. They're going to try to limit opportunities for mistakes. So yeah, like, they might not score a lot of points, but the chances of sacks and turnovers aren't super high, in my opinion.
Right. That's basically where I'm going with this, is that, I mean, Arizona knows they're going to be pretty limited. So yeah, they're not going to be throwing bombs downfield. They're not going to necessarily be dropping back, you know, these long dropbacks that could lead to sacks. If Washington doesn't get sacks, doesn't get turnovers, they're not getting defensive fantasy points. Like, they could have an excellent defensive game. You know, they could win, you know, 28-7. They could actually blow them out way more than the spread indicates and still not have a very good, you know, high scoring fantasy defense. It reminds me of week two last year where the Cincinnati defense saw like record high ownership. Because Cooper Rush was starting. Dak got injured week one.
Cooper Rush, had a Rush great went game. In.
And then, yeah, the Cincinnati defense ended up, you know, being 40% owned, which I think was just inexcusable in the large field tournaments and even in single entry. And I think you're gonna get way different than a big percentage of the field this week if you just don't take the Washington Commanders defense.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, you know, fundamentally, obviously we discovered last year that get you and me on air, we're gonna kind of talk about the slate as a whole, but fundamentally this is a single entry show. And so pulling it back to that, I think that for me, you know, Miles Sanders is very much in the mix for me in single entry, and not playing the Washington defense is very much in the mix for me. And in terms of leverage, you can also not play the Washington defense and then also play the Washington passing attack, or even better, people aren't going to go to the Washington backfield. I think that's an interesting spot. It would have to be larger field single entry for that for me. But yeah, I think that there's some interesting ways to go with just those two hot takes that I think it's week one, right? So it's almost like they're hot takes because it's not what people are thinking. But then if you zoom out and look at it logically, they're not really that hot of takes, you know, like yours is a scorching hot take, but then it's like, oh, but is it really, you know? And I think that's kind of one of the keys to week one is we know so little. And so typically the spots where we have concentrated certainty, the field is going to be wrong there just because the certainty isn't as high. And, you know, Washington could have a pick six on the first play of the game, you know, but if we're saying, if we play out this slate 100 times, Washington's not going to be the highest scoring defense 30% of the time, and they could be 30% owned. You know, they'd probably be highest scoring defense 5 to 10% of the time, maybe 8% of the time, somewhere in that range, maybe less, right? Because again, not a lot of opportunities for sacks and turnovers just based on how Arizona is likely to call this game.
Right. So yeah, the 26 teams in play. So the average defense would be optimal, you know, 4% yeah. or so, or a little bit less. Maybe Washington has twice the chance of, you know, miss, that's still 7% or so. I think they're going to see 30% ownership, particularly on DraftKings, where they're one of the cheaper defenses. I think on FanDuel, they're one of the more expensive. I think they're the second most expensive defense. So I think the ownership could get extreme on DraftKings, maybe a little bit more muted on FanDuel. But like we kind of talked about last season, like defensive scoring could just be so random.
Yeah.
You know, I think you mentioned the idea of like, it's like almost like you roll the dice at the end, you know, at the end of your lineup and get a random, you know, numerical score that's generally somewhere between -1 and you know, 20 something, yeah. Right? But if you know, 30% of the field is taking the same roll of the dice, I guess I just want to be on any other roll of the dice.
Yeah, I like that. I'll definitely be significantly underweight on the Washington defense this week. This is kind of a weird direction to go next, but like really quickly, is there like two or three defenses that are standing out to you?
I think so. We have a number of quarterbacks that are making their NFL debut. And that's, yeah, that's something I always have, you know, interest in. I think so. Atlanta defense is a defense that I'm interested in. And actually, I think it's an interesting pairing with Bijan Robinson, who is maybe a little bit too expensive on DraftKings, but I don't think he's going to see that much ownership. On FanDuel, is actually less expensive and potentially like better scoring on FanDuel if he's not catching a ton of passes, which, you know, we don't know how much Atlanta is going to throw. So I think like the Atlanta defense paired with Bijan Robinson, particularly on FanDuel, where it's a little bit more affordable. And then, yeah, the Baltimore defense, you'll have to pay up for them. But again, you know, facing a debuting quarterback in Baltimore, if both those teams are playing at home, I guess the last quarterback that's making his debut, I think, is Anthony Richardson. I'm not as interested in the Jacksonville defense. One, they're on the road. Two, actually, like Anthony Richardson, even in a single entry format, I like him for the rushing upside.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be one of the lower owned quarterbacks that I'm interested in for like single entry, that I have enough interest in him that might make it onto some of my single entry rosters. But yeah, I think Anthony Richardson's somebody I'm interested in, and
yeah,
I'm not as interested in.
I think that swings us over to quarterback, which is where people would have expected us to go next. And one of the things that's interesting about Anthony Richardson is we can keep in mind that Shane Steichen, you know, new head coach for the Colts, he was there Justin Herbert's rookie year. He was in Philly with Jalen Hurts his rookie year, his first start. And so this is not new to him to be taking on this young quarterback and calling their first game. And one of the things that he talked about was that what he tries to do with these young guys is make sure that the entire game plan is stuff that they feel comfortable with. And so there's such a learning curve to be an NFL quarterback. So rather than expecting, putting them in a position like, hey, let's have them grow in this game, you know, give them some stuff they're uncomfortable with. It's like, what is everything that he has down pat? What is everything that he's able to execute at a high level right now? And then each week we'll kind of keep building onto that game plan. Because right now there's no film on this Colts offense. There's no film on Anthony Richardson. There's no drawback to having a third of their playbook available to them. And then next week it becomes 38% of the playbook. Next week, 44%, right? They just keep growing and adding new things. And so from that standpoint, I expect Shane Steichen to call a game that very much fits Anthony Richardson's comfort level right now and his skill set. And his skill set is this potential to have 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. And so, yeah, I think that Anthony Richardson, he's maybe one of 4 quarterbacks that I'm really leaning toward in single entry. The others being Jalen Hurts, and then Sam Howell and Russell Wilson, a little bit more off the board, I guess, on Sam Howell. But yeah, those are the guys who I like in single entry. Anthony Richardson's definitely in that mix for me.
Interesting. So Anthony Richardson's probably our only overlap there. I do like the idea, you know, Jalen Hurts is probably not going to see a lot of ownership. And this could be one of those weeks where, you know, the Eagles just put up a lot of points. I mean, it was a tremendous offense last year. It's just, yeah, he's not going to project that well because the Eagles don't project to score that many points. They're on the road. It's not a great matchup. But I think we saw with Lamar Jackson a couple of times last season where he wasn't supposed to be high-owned because the Ravens weren't supposed to score a ton of points. And then, well, he gets, you know, gets 80 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns or, you know, whatever, the, you know, puts up strong running numbers along with good passing numbers. And then that's suddenly a quarterback that it borders on you had to have him. I think Howell, I'm interested to see what his ownership is because he's really cheap on DraftKings. Somebody else that I like at that exact same price on DraftKings is probably my other maybe off the board quarterback that I like is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I like him a lot too.
Yeah, I've heard him talked up a little bit, so he may end up getting higher ownership than we're expecting. But he's in a much better position than he's been in his, some of his previous spots. I mean, last year he was on Carolina when Carolina wasn't good and then, you know, joined the Rams when the Rams were no longer good. So, you know, those were 2, I think, difficult spots for him. You know, obviously his stay in Cleveland didn't end well, but I think that his last year in Cleveland, I think he was probably more injured than people were thinking. And then management went out and so I think, you know, with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and, you know, even like some Cade Otton, like that's a much better spot than, and just the game environment, you know, they're playing in Minnesota, that's inside the dome. Minnesota gave up a ton of passing yards last season. So Baker Mayfield's a quarterback I have some interest in.
Yeah, no, I like that call a lot. You know, with Washington, there's, I dive into this. I had a podcast that was kind of replaced the Angles podcast. It's on the 1 week season podcast feed. It was called the Week One Special. And I went game by game. And there's some angles where just a lot of things with the team that Washington's one of the few teams that I could see being up 24-0 and still passing the ball. So I think that it's an interesting spot given all the things that I'm kind of seeing there. Totally agree on Baker Mayfield. One of the things I want to bring up real quickly on this perception of the match against the Patriots being bad. Patriots allowed 37 points to the Ravens last year, running quarterback. They allowed 27 points to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, 33 points to the Bears, running quarterback and Fields, 33 points to the Vikings, 24 and 35 points to Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, 30 points to the Raiders. And the Patriots defense, what they do well, you know, 3rd in the NFL in sacks last year, near the top of the league in turnovers, top of the league in defensive touchdowns. Like they're very aggressive. But that aggressiveness, especially with their tendency toward man coverage and blitz, really opens things up for running quarterbacks and opens things up for players like Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, who can beat man coverage. So the Patriots are, you know, the old Patriots were so interested in preventing points. It was like, make you march the field, wait for you to make a mistake. The new Patriots with Mayo and Steve Belichick, it's very much like, we're going to try to force you into mistakes. And you might get some big plays, but we're also going to force some turnovers, give our offense some short fields. So they're less interested in point prevention and more interested in like that, those punches and counter punches sort of back and forth. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just a spot where I think that's going to be the perception is like, well, the total's kind of low, and but it's week one, right? The totals don't mean as much. We know so much less than we will deeper into the season. So yeah, I think it's a very interesting spot. And because I think these thoughts will lead to Hurts being lower owned than he normally would be. It becomes very interesting in single entry play. So I did want to kind of toss those thoughts your way just for you to loop into your own play and for the audience to have like that angle to think about there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a pretty compelling argument to be putting in some Jalen Hurts, because we know what he can do. And I think one thing you guys referenced in your write-up for 1 week season is that people maybe underestimate how good the Eagles offense was last season, because they were up so much in the second half of games that, you know, they would take the foot off the gas, sometimes even take the players out of the game. And so you're like, what if they're pressed to keep going all four quarters against a defense that maybe, where maybe the perception is that they're not, you know, that they're better than they really are. So one last quarterback I want to touch on, just because I think he's going to be, I think he's going to be fairly highly owned, but I think it's somewhat warranted, is Justin Herbert. Just playing in the highest, point total game of the week. That's definitely a game stack I'm going to have some interest in, just in case that game kind of, blows out or blows over the total in the afternoon games.
Yeah. I mean, that game is, I have to be aware that my personality is to be like automatically biased against whatever is the most popular play on the slate. Like, that's just the way my mind works, right? So then I have to be like, oh, well, let me force myself to see the positives. But it is also very easy for me to see the negatives in that game. I mean, a 51 point total is great, but that implies a 27 to 24 point score. That's actually the implied score right now. And at the price tags on these guys, you need each team to be scoring four touchdowns. So you're still betting on an outlier for this game. And I think a lot of people will just look at that highest total and go toward it. So it is not difficult to paint the picture of each team scoring four touchdowns. But I do think that, like, not you, but like the typical DFS player, the typical viewer on here also has to be aware, like, oh, this does have to go to four plus touchdowns, right? Like, it has to hit that level. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people won't be thinking of, and they'll just be like, well, let me just plug in these plays because it feels most comfortable. So, yeah, I'll have that game. I'm actually going to avoid it in single entry just because I think it's going to be so popular. And I think there are other places to go, but it won't surprise me if, like, I come out of week one and lost money because I didn't have that in single entry. You know, like, that won't be a surprise to me at all.
Just one thing I'm thinking is that it is week one, and that tends to be a little bit of a softer week in terms of DFS players, right? A lot of people are playing football for DFS, for the first time week one. And I wonder if they, people that aren't using projections, I mean, that's less and less of the DFS crowd, but maybe they're not using projections. And so maybe they're not on this game as much as they should be. And maybe they're just plugging in the Commanders defense. Like we kind of talked about last year, that what can make single entry so appealing is so many people are just plugging in a cash lineup. And they're not stacking, and they're just going with the chalkiest defense. Everyone's going to click on the Washington defense. And if you take that stack that is just projected to be, in the highest scoring game, and just make sure it's a stack, make sure it's a game stack, and just make sure your defense is a little different, that might be different enough for a single entry where a lot of people are just putting in their cash lineups.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, nothing against the game. You know what I mean? I think the both defenses are really good, and now Vic Fangio's with Miami. Like, there's potential for it to be, again, even a 27 to 24 game kind of hurts everybody who pay the price tags. But like I said, it's not going to surprise me if the reason I don't make money in week one, and we're looking at all of this as building up sample sizes, right? So it's like, I won't be disappointed if I don't make money in week one, as long as I know that I was positioning myself to make money if we could play out this same slate 100 times. So one of the stances I'll be taking in kind of tighter builds is staying away from that game, but that's not to say that the game can't hit. It's just like, here's one of the paths that I see to making money on this week. And if this is a week where that game goes off, then, hopefully one of my large field rosters built around that game. Cause I'll have that's the thing with that game, is I want to be either all in or not on it. Right. And so I'll have some large field rosters that go all in on that game. And hopefully those make up for whatever I lose in tighter builds if that game goes off.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sure. So just a couple of other games I wanted to touch on. One is one that has kind of surprisingly high total, at least to me. And maybe even just the spread's a little bit tighter than I would have thought. But the Rams in Seattle, you know, especially with Cooper Kupp being out now, I'm kind of thinking of the Rams just like last season and almost like expecting them to have a, 17 or 18 point implied total. It's actually 21. I think just a 4.5 point spread with Seattle. And I think there's going to be some pieces from that game that are popular, like Kenneth Walker, I think will be somewhat popular at running back on DraftKings. But, I think there's some workload concerns there. And there's a thought that maybe, maybe Seattle just runs away with this game.
Yeah, I knew that the total had dropped. I thought it had dropped more. It's still at 46 and a 5 point spread. So, Rams implied for 20.5. Yeah, I that's a game that I'll have a little bit of Puka Nacua. I don't go to Tyler Higbee at high ownership. I literally, outside of a little bit of Puka Nacua in large field, I might have 0% ownership, because I'm with you on like Kenneth Walker is an excellent real life NFL back. But if you look through his game logs, he had a couple 30 point games pretty early in the season last year. And that stuck that in everyone's mind of like, ooh, I got to be here for the next 30 pointer. The rest of the season was sub 20, like consistently 16, 17, 18 points. Excellent player, but not like an excellent DFS producer. They don't throw the ball to running backs a ton. And then he's coming off a lot of missed time in camp. And now they have Charbonnet, who they really like, and they were developing him. Like, I don't see Kenneth Walker getting 24 touches, right? And then going with the exception of like five games at the start of the 2021 season, when Pete Carroll experimented with this let Russ cook offense, outside of that very small stretch, the entire Pete Carroll era, you never, ever, 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 ever want to play the Seattle passing attack unless you expect the opponent to be pushing things on the scoreboard. Every big game from the Seattle passing attack comes from the opponent pushing things on the scoreboard. And so, DK Metcalf had one useful game last year at his price tag. Tyler Lockett had two useful games last year at his price tag. And I think the people will still kind of go there. And I know Kenneth Walker currently is projecting for high ownership. The Rams, I think Seattle has Super Bowl aspirations. They think that they're one of the two or three best teams in the NFC. The Rams don't have an offensive line. They don't have wide receivers. Van Jefferson is a borderline number three wide receiver on other teams, and he's their number one this week. I don't see much opportunity to the upside in that game. And kudos to anybody who goes in on that game and, makes a bunch of money this week because they were right. But I think it's pretty slim paths to that game shooting out. I'm surprised the total's still where it is.
Yeah, I have some interest maybe in the Rams side, like Cam Akers and Tutu Atwell. That's maybe more price considered, right, than actually, like, they might be a piece that makes everything else fit. And I don't know how much success the Rams passing offense is going to get. So maybe Akers is getting, a little bit more usage, which is good at his price. That's a game I'm surprised the point total is so high, but yeah, maybe we're regretting that at this time next week.
Yeah.
And then a game, one of the early games I want to touch on, Cleveland and Cincinnati, is a game that I think I'm going to be having some game stacks of. I don't know if those game stacks will have Joe Burrow, but I, outside of game stacks, I'm not sure if there's pieces that fit on some of my other rosters.
Yeah, that's how I'm seeing it too. And I gave a preliminary look at ownership projections last night, actually just making sure that everything was up and running correctly on the site, and kind of was like, oh, let me see what these show. And Ja'Marr Chase was showing relatively high. Again, it's still early in the week for that to be totally accurate. But I just love seeing that because it's like, it's hard for me to see Chase having a tournament winning game independent of the game environment as a whole doing really well. And I think there will be a lot of one-off Chase exposure that if he misses, he misses for everybody. If he hits, he hits for those people as a one-off piece, but he's hitting for my rosters that are stacking up that game and taking advantage of all the pieces that are then benefiting as a result. So yeah, I have a hard time at the price tags seeing this game. Now the Brown side is different because Amari is underpriced and Elijah Moore might be underpriced. David Njoku is underpriced for his ceiling, not underpriced for his typical range, but underpriced for his ceiling. Like, so the Brown side, I can see playing a few of those pieces independent of game environment, but the Bengal side, it's going to be totally like, they're going to be on rosters for me built around that game or not at all. And that game's interesting because, I mean, Burrow's 1-4 against the Browns, and he struggled against this pass rush, this defense. Now they've added Za'Darius Smith. They've added Jim Schwartz as the defensive coordinator, which is a big upgrade for them. They've added Juan Thornhill at safety, who's a really good player. Denzel Ward is in concussion protocol, so probably going to miss this game. Lightens up the matchup a little bit, but could be a low-scoring game. But at the same time, if Deshaun Watson bounces back and looks like Deshaun Watson, he's got all these weapons. We know how good Burrow and Chase are. Another year of improvement. Like, it's going to be a competitive game. It won't surprise me if it's low scoring. It won't surprise me if it's high scoring. So yeah, it's one of those where I'm going to build some rosters around this game. I wouldn't argue against anybody who wanted to build these in single entry. I don't think I'll be going there myself in single entry or tighter builds, but yeah, I'm going to have like 10% of my rosters in large field will be built around this game.
That's about how I feel. It's interesting. At RotoGrinders, we have an optimal stacks tool that I think is new this year. But you know, I'm writing an article based off of that, and I was actually surprised that they were showing you know, Deshaun Watson as probably the highest owned quarterback on FanDuel, which I don't know if that'll end up playing out that way. You know, but my commentary on that was that I have interest in Deshaun Watson, Jamar Chase pairing, right? Like if Chase gets three touchdowns and Deshaun Watson is getting, you know, a rushing touchdown, then that's possibly an optimal stack. And that I can see the game. That seems like a plausible way for that game to play out. Or maybe Chase is getting a, you know, double-digit receptions game with two touchdowns or 100 yards, but he's the primary cog of the Cincinnati offense. And so you don't need Joe Burrow to pair with him. You just need Jamar Chase. And then you can take like a rushing quarterback that's getting some rushing yards, like Deshaun Watson, and that kind of you know, pairs well together, where that maybe both teams are pushing each other a little bit. But I don't know that like having Deshaun Watson in games outside of a game stack makes sense on either site, on FanDuel or DraftKings.
Yeah, and I like that that thought of I love doing that where if Chase hits, Burrow is probably hitting as well. But if Burrow's hitting, then Deshaun Watson's probably hitting as well, and then he's getting more rushing yards, so he might have the higher upside, right? So it's like you recognize that you really only want to play Chase with his quarterback, but then you recognize that actually means it might be even better playing with the other team's quarterback in this situation, which is a more unique way to put it together. You know, it's similar to, I think, Anthony Richardson and Calvin Ridley becomes a lot more interesting this week than Trevor Lawrence and Calvin Ridley, because in order for Calvin Ridley to I mean, he's underpriced by about 1K from where he'll probably be in a month. But like, in order for him to really prove that this week, he might need the Colts putting up points. And if the Colts are putting up points, it's coming through Anthony Richardson, and like his points are more valuable with his rushing and all that, especially at his price tag, than Trevor Lawrence, who's going to pick up, you know, 20, 30 yards on the ground, but most of that's going to come through the air. So yeah, I love that little game right there where it's like, okay, yeah, I want this guy, and that means his quarterback is hitting, but if his quarterback's hitting, the other quarterback's probably hitting too and is more valuable.
I think that's a great call. Because I, like I said, I have some interest in Anthony Richardson, and that makes sense that if Calvin Ridley's having a great game, that means, you know, maybe Richardson's having to press it a little bit more. Just on the topic of wide receivers, how do you differentiate the top three? Because I think the top three this week, you know, at least by projections, are Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, and Jamar Chase, which I guess if you had to pick one of those guys as a one-off, you know, for your rosters, like, which are you most interested in outside the game stack?
Yeah, it would go in order: Jefferson, then Hill, then Chase. Like, Jefferson, I mean, what did Jefferson put up 9 games last year of like 28.5 or more points on DraftKings? and Kirk Cousins had maybe one useful week at his salary. It's just like he's so central to that offense that him hitting doesn't mean Kirk Cousins is a, like Jefferson can be a tournament winning piece and Kirk Cousins isn't. And that's the way it typically falls out. Tyreek Hill is more dependent on the game environment than Justin Jefferson is. So he's down a notch for me. I like him more in stacks of that game. He's one piece from that game that I could have a little bit of outside of that game. And then Chase for me is very much restricted to that game environment. Like I'll have more Davante Adams than I'll have of Ja'Marr Chase. I'll actually have more Davante Adams than I'll have of Tyreek Hill too, because Tyreek Hill will mostly be married to that stack for me. And Davante Adams has same upside, same consistency in terms of hitting that upside, actually higher consistency last year, but obviously, you know, had Derek Carr and the familiarity there. We don't know yet with Jimmy Garoppolo, but then much lower ownership. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's like Jefferson's kind of clear of those top three. What are your thoughts on those three?
So yeah, I had it like with Hill and Justin Jefferson very close. They might be two of my higher owned receivers this week, just because I really like both of those games. Like if I'm using a game stack from one of those games, it's probably going to have, you know, one of those receivers on it. I had Hill a little bit ahead of Justin Jefferson, but it's pretty close. It's almost like impossible to tell. But I did have like Ja'Marr Chase just a little bit behind those two. I think the Davante Adams call is interesting. Like I'm just, you know, looking at some projections and I've got Keenan Allen just a little bit ahead of Davante Adams, but like, I agree. I'd much rather play Adams than Allen. So I think Adams probably falls like fourth at, right after those top three. And then like Keenan Allen, like you wrote up, he just rarely pays off his, like he's always going to get some receptions. He rarely pays off his price tag in tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is like the rare week where I could actually play Keenan Allen in tournaments, but it'll be in total game stacks there. Like it won't be Keenan Allen as a one-off, because again, it feels awesome to everybody when they roster him and he gets 20 points, but then he's never on that tournament winning roster, because at 7,300, those 20 points feel good, but they're just not enough. And you kind of, he has so few paths to those 35 pointers that roster spot and that salary is now, you know, taken away from your opportunity to get one of those. So yeah, really, I mean, AJ Brown obviously is interesting to me as a stacking partner with Jalen Hurts, who nobody will be on AJ Brown, but like those top four guys, Davante Adams, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, are very clearly in a tier well above all the guys priced right below them, you know, in terms of how frequently they can hit 30 pointers. You know, their opportunities for a 40-point type game is so much higher than these guys priced below them. And not to say that maybe Jalen Waddle doesn't hit a 40-pointer this week or Devontae Smith doesn't hit a 40-pointer, but it's just like that's more of an outlier, whereas these top four guys, like I'd rather carve out the extra salary to get up to these guys as opposed to fishing down in like this 7K range for sure.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, kind of running short on time. Any final thoughts for the week?
No, I mean, I think one of the things, I mean, yes, there are some final thoughts. I think, you know, we've been talking about this Vikings-Bucks game. I think Mike Evans is very interesting. Chris Godwin has a tougher matchup in the slot, and nobody's going to be looking at Mike Evans. Chris Godwin's going to be more popular for whatever reason. So I think that's a very interesting spot to consider. And then I think paying attention to just who is priced a lot lower than they will be in a month, you know? So that's Deebo Samuel, it's Chris Olave, it's Calvin Ridley, it's Amari Cooper. Some of these guys who are just a little bit mispriced, and maybe this isn't the spot where they hit, but just being able to be aware of those misprices and try to take advantage of them. That's, I guess that wraps up my thoughts. I think, you know, it's easy for any of you watching, it's easy to be excited about week one and then overcommit to week one in terms of bankroll. And I would say that the sharpest DFS players have an edge on week one. And even some of the sharpest DFS players don't, because if their edge is something different, like I said, my edge is this blend of how well I know the teams and how well I understand DFS. And I like can overrate my knowledge of the teams early in the season. So be aware of like where your edge is as a player and whether or not week one falls into the bucket of your edge, and be smart with your bankroll on this week. Cause a lot of times people will, they'll blow, you know, 2x, 3x their typical buy-in because they're excited about week one. And it's actually maybe a worse week for them. So, important to be aware of that as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. It is. It's so tempting, to just think, well, this is going to be the softest week of the season. And it like you might be part of that softness. You might be the nail, not the hammer. So yeah, I think that's good advice for week one. That just about wraps it up for week one of Soloship. Good luck to everybody on Sunday, and we'll see you next week.